Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
A spike in deadly violence on the streets of Portland that started last summer is showing no signs of slowing down. Today, an in-depth look at the continued troubling trend, the collateral damage being done, and how no one can seem to agree on how to fight it. It is Tuesday, April 6th. I'm Ian Costello, and this is Beyond the Headlines on the Coin Podcast Network.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Liz Birch.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Reporter Liz Birch has been tracking the rise in shootings and homicides in Portland over the last year for Coin 6 News.
So, Liz, you and I kind of talked about doing this story a few months ago when we saw the numbers were bad.
Yeah.
The shooting numbers, the homicide numbers were bad. Things haven't gotten any better.
Just looking at the data, they've gotten worse.
What is the data saying right now? How bad are things?
Bad. At the middle of last week, I think it was on Wednesday, we'd had multiple fatalities in one night. One was a standoff where somebody had ended their own life, but there was also a shooting that killed somebody and a stabbing that killed somebody. The public information officer for the police department said that it was all during the same shift for many of these officers. And I asked him what the total number of homicides was for this year. So we're just talking the 3 months of this year. And he said we were already at 25. So just to kind of give you some perspective on that, because I mean, that is an alarming number, 25 people killed in our city, but it's hard when you don't quite have the context of what would be normal. If you look at 2016, we had 20 total homicides. 2017, it was 26. 2018, 29. 2019, 32. And then we were talking about 54 in 2020. That's a significant rise. In the 90s, I believe it was in 93, we had 54 homicides total for the year. And that was the highest we've had in a long time. And we haven't had a number that high since then. So just in the past 3 months, we're on record to beat that by quite a bit. And when we're talking about this month-to-month rise, it's really significant too. So it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And talking to these police officers about it, they say, and actually a direct quote from this public information officer was, they quite literally can't keep up.
When he says quite literally can't keep up, what does that mean?
What he said was that their homicide detectives are just buried under this caseload. He pointed out that it would be unusual to have two or three homicides, two or three fatalities that they're investigating at the same time within a week in Portland in the past. We're talking not only one night, but one shift. There was another time I talked to a different public information officer with PPB, and he was saying how thin their resources were spread. His quote was buried under their caseload. They just keep getting more and more of these coming in, but they have the same staffing. They have the same amount of people. So this is fairly unprecedented for the Portland Police Bureau.
The problem here is responding to these shootings, responding to these homicides is preventing them from doing their other police work, regular everyday stuff that in a normal year would be dominating their workflow, whether it's the traffic stops, whether it's the breaking and entering, whether it's the assault calls. This is dominating both their workload and their available officers.
Is affecting their response times, and it is affecting them responding to other 911 calls. Obviously, they have to prioritize with a certain number of staff what they're going out to. And if people's lives are being lost and shots are being fired, that's going to be a really high priority call that ties up a lot of their officers. It's not only impacting their ability to solve these homicide cases, but also to respond to other 911 calls in the city of Portland.
Liz, we know that the gun violence reduction team was disbanded last summer in the wake of George Floyd's murder. Now we've got this enhanced community safety team.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through the difference between the two?
You know, it's funny. I've asked both the mayor and I've asked the chief that same question because I'm having trouble understanding it as well. So gun violence reduction team disbanded over the summer. This idea of the enhanced community safety team really came to the public forefront in February. Instead of being preventative, it would focus on investigations. So that was the difference at the time. But then more recently, I think it was roughly a month ago now, there was this proposal by IPAC, which is a group of faith leaders in Portland, to give $2 million more in funding, both to the ECST and also to the Office of Violence Prevention. And in that proposal, they also suggested the idea of bringing in a different aspect that isn't just investigative, that would also be more preventative to stop these shootings. So they proposed that idea. Now you've got city commissioners coming back with a counterproposal saying, no, we don't want that. But in between those two events, I asked the chief, okay, now what's the difference? And I asked the mayor that same question. The mayor's response was essentially that there would be this idea of community oversight that would come in. That was the piece, they argue, that was missing with the gun violence reduction team. This concept that there would be this community oversight that would talk with police, request data from police, ask about who was being stopped, why they were being stopped, what the outcome of those stops were. As of right this second, the enhanced community safety team is solely focused on investigations. They're not doing any kind of preventative work. They're not really meeting with the community or doing anything like that. They're just going out to the actual shooting scenes themselves. Their argument is that hopefully having this really specialized, specific group of people that are just focusing on this, even if they don't have the preventative measures that GVRT did, police feel that that would make their other officers more available to be able to respond to those other calls we were talking about, the other lower priority incidents that are going on in the city, so they don't have to tie up as many officers at one time.
We've talked a lot. You and I have talked. I'm sure in your reporting, this has come up. It's a discussion that has kind of dominated this discussion in our editorial meetings. There's these accusations that GVRT was disproportionately targeting communities of color. You can get into the semantics of what the criticisms actually were,
right,
whether it was targeting, whether it was disproportionately stopping people in communities of color. These are the same neighborhoods where there's a disproportionate amount of the violence.
Yeah.
How does that square? So you disband the GVRT because it was disproportionately targeting or disproportionately stopping people in neighborhoods of color or people of color. Isn't this new enhanced community safety team responding to shootings in those same communities?
What's really sad when we look at the data for who these shootings is impacting, and Chief Lavelle has brought this up a couple times, it's really primarily impacting or disproportionately impacting people of color and Black men. So the people who are being injured, the people who are being shot, it's mostly Black men. So that's a really difficult thing to grapple with in our community, that it really is people of color who are being impacted by these shootings. And that's something IPAC has brought up a lot too. Something like half of the people who had been injured by shootings were people of color. When you look at the demographics of Portland, that's a really shocking and extremely concerning statistic. You know, I just interviewed Commissioner Hardesty last week, and I talked to her about GVRT, and I asked her if she thought disbanding GVRT was a mistake, and she did bring up that they were stopping primarily people of color.
So for 14 years, no one thought 50% of the stops being of Black people were a problem. And I find that pretty appalling.
And she was concerned that it wasn't just that they were just stopping people of color disproportionately. She believed that wasn't necessarily tied to the outcomes of who was actually being convicted.
When I looked at the numbers and the outcomes, honestly, there was no increase in gun violence prosecution. So why do we have a team that doesn't actually lead to prosecuting the people who are creating the community harm?
We chatted for a while about that, and I asked her if she thought that disbanding the team contributed to the rise in shootings now at all.
Absolutely not. It is a totally unrelated issue. The city council voted to remove the gun violence reduction team in June of last year. In July, the first report came out saying gun violence was up all across the country. I also remember clearly the police bureau saying, yep, see, they did away with the gun violence reduction team, and all of a sudden we got this rise in gun violence. No thinking person would believe that a week after the city council votes, all of a sudden people are now feeling free to just go out into the street and shoot their guns because there's not a gun violence reduction team. We still have the same number of police officers. In fact, doing away with the gun violence reduction team gave us 44 more officers available for patrol.
she said, you know, over the summer was when we were seeing the effects of the pandemic and that we've seen gun violence rise across the country. And she didn't think disbanding GVRT had anything to do with that. Obviously, other people have had very different opinions. And that's why I wanted to ask her that, too, because when you look at the data of when our shootings really started to spike, I mean, they've gotten astronomically worse since the year started. But really, when we started to see the trend begin was around June, July, the same time that GVRT is being disbanded.
Let's talk a little bit more about your conversation with Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. Mayor Ted Wheeler asked for $2 million for this enhanced community safety team to address this surge in violence, and it met almost immediate blowback from the commission, including very vocal opposition from Commissioner Hardesty. Why not spend the money? Is she of the opinion that the money isn't going to help? Is she of the opinion that the money would be better spent elsewhere? What is Commissioner Hardesty's and the rest of the city commissioner's stance against the $2 million?
So they want to see that money go instead, and not to the police department, but instead they want to see that money go into community groups and kind of this alternative idea of safety.
So we're looking at some of the programs that we already fund, but we also know there's some really innovative new programs out that we may want to invest some dollars in.
She did acknowledge the gun violence problem. You know, she said she knew it was devastating. And she said she knew that governments across the country are struggling with how to respond to the increase in gun violence. The way she put it, she said that she didn't want the response to gun violence to be what she calls a knee-jerk reaction. She said, you know, we originally cut funding to specific programs in PPB. I imagine she was referring to GVRT then because of the racially disparate outcomes. But when we were talking, she told me that she doesn't think the role of police is to prevent crime or to intervene with the community. She said that she thinks the role of the police is simply to solve crime. So they looked at some other ways of funding these community groups. They wanted to add park rangers. That was in the proposal from the other city commissioners as well. And she also said that she thinks police have all the resources they need. And she says they don't even need specialty units to solve crime. She says she wants a public health model. She wants it to be community groups that are dealing with this. She also brought up that she thinks there's too much access to guns, too many guns on the streets, and she kind of wants to get to the bottom of where these guns are coming from. And because she brought that up, I actually did ask police specifically about that, where these guns are coming from. They told me it's kind of a mix. It's a mix between firearms that are stolen. They also said some of these firearms are legally purchased, but then they're used for crimes. And then there's a third category of people, and this is something they've been seeing a lot too, where a gun will be legally purchased but then given to somebody who shouldn't have a firearm, like a felon.
How does it end? What's the solution?
I think what we see right now in talking to all these different people, talking about the devastation with gun violence, I don't know that there is any one solution. It's an incredibly complicated topic. I wish I had that answer. It seems like there is a lot of disagreement within our community and even within our government on how to handle this in Portland. You know, it's tough. It's really tough going out and talking to these victims' families and going to these scenes. It's something that impacts me a lot personally. I think a lot about what they say and what they're dealing with. There's one story, one person that's really stuck with me. His name is Raymond Smith, and his wife, Kelly Smith, was killed in the crossfire of gunfire back in December. She was an Uber Eats delivery driver. So they were on their last delivery of the night. They were together. They were doing it together so they could spend time together. She was making this delivery and she was gunned down and killed. Since then, he's been diagnosed with cancer. I think one of the most emotional pieces of that was he was telling me how hard it was to try to navigate having cancer without her there. So just listening to him talk about that was so tough. And then, of course, him recounting being there with his wife while she was murdered in front of him. He told me he wants to see more done by the city and he wants to see another, he referred to it as a gun task force, similar to GVRT or ECST. He wants to see the city invest in that. And of course, he told me he doesn't want anyone else to go through this. And the other thing that's scary and sad when you're going out to these scenes and talking to people, there's so many rounds being fired. Sometimes you go out there and people will say, like, I heard 20, 30 rounds or sometimes more. And that's fairly consistent in talking to these people. When that happens, there's these stray bullets that are flying through people's homes. It might be a retaliatory targeted shooting, but people are getting caught in the crossfire or close to being caught in the crossfire. So that's really concerning too. And some of those people I've talked to have also said they want to see more of an investment in police. But again, that's certainly not agreed across the board. Not everyone wants to see that. Not everyone thinks that's the solution. What everyone agrees on is this is a huge issue in Portland. This is the worst we've seen it in 30-ish years. And I think everyone agrees that time is of the essence because it's getting worse and worse and worse. Everyone we talk to agrees that something needs to be done soon. They just can't agree on what. This is a really complex issue.
That will do it for us today. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.